Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. Today is interview day, and with us is my man, the author of The Heritage. Be sure to check that out if you have not. It is a fantastic book. His name is Howard Bryant. And Howard, you are a Massachusetts guy. You're from there. You live up there. What's up with your man's craft, man?
Yeah, because he's mine.
Yes, he's totally yours. I'm totally giving him to you.
Well, you know what? I bet there aren't a lot of people who want to take him these days. Despite his riches, despite everything, if you read that police report and everything else, and I don't trust police reports anyway, but they got him on video and everything else. This is it's a bad scene in a lot of ways, Bo, but it's also, you start looking at the chronology of it, and you're going, you did this and then got on a plane for the AFC Championship game?
Yeah.
It's the same morning.
Yeah, that was, like, if we got beyond, like, just the pure horrific parts and got strictly to, like, yeah, he was like, yo, before we get out of here, like, he was stopping at Walgreens, right? Like, yo, I need to go pick something up right fast, then we can take it to the jet.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, when I heard that story, in fact, it's funny how stories hit you. You know, where you get the news, where you find stuff out at. I mean, you can always remember different times when you heard something that was newsworthy, and you're like, damn, I remember where I was when that happened. This one, I was like taking a nap or reading something or whatever, just doing some research, and then I got a one-sentence email from a friend of mine that said, Bob Kraft busted for prostitution. And I'm like, I think this is a link you got to click on.
Yeah. Yeah, like,
it's not really to make light of it either, because when you read it, obviously it's disturbing, especially the sex trafficking part of it. I'm not exactly how I feel about the other stuff, whether you're talking about weed or prostitution or all those different things being illegal. I'm not sure how I feel about that from just a regular sort of citizenry standpoint. But the sex trafficking part of it is a different story, and that's the serious part of the story, and that's the part where you're like, okay, this isn't a joke. And he better not be involved in that, because if he is, then he's finished. The rest of it, it might be something that people end up laughing about one day, but the other part of it is, okay, who are these people involved with this spa? Where did they come from? How are they there? Were they there against their will? The rest of that stuff, if he's got knowledge of that or if he's part of that, then you could say goodbye to Bob Kraft.
Well, there's also a question just of how far you can get at this point with the idea of I didn't know. Right, because the plausible deniability that some seem to be offering Kraft is they didn't know that these women were perhaps here in a human trafficking ring. And no, you don't really know, kind of like you didn't know that stereo that you bought for $35 was stolen, right? You didn't see the guy go steal it or anything like that. But he's going to be an interesting test case in how much people are going to believe you should know whether you did or not.
Yeah, and he's going to get the sliding scale of justice for being a billionaire. He's going to get it from the NFL because he's one of them. It's not like he's a player where you can throw players in the garbage whenever you want when you're ownership, because that's what they do. But it's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see how the NFL handles this, because you know they don't want to handle it at all. It's not as though Bob Kraft works for Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell works for Bob Kraft. So however you put the hammer down, you're going to have to put that hammer down with all the other owners having to agree to put down one of their own. And they don't do that very lightly. Yeah. And they certainly don't do it very lightly, knowing full well that not too long ago, the Washington Redskins were essentially pimping out their cheerleaders to their executives on that Costa Rica trip. And so
somehow that story, by the way, has been forgotten, because I really hadn't thought about it, and I don't know how long until you just said it.
Imagine that, right? I mean, and this is the thing. It's like, you guys, these guys... And the Raider cheerleaders, when you start looking at the different things that they've done, that ownership has done to people in their employ, you essentially sent them out as escorts. And so how are you now going to turn around and drop a hammer on Bob Kraft when you're doing this under the company masthead?
Well, and one thing, too, about people of that level of money, if you have thought of that, Bob Kraft has thought of that, and he will absolutely take this. Because, look, the fact that he came out and was on the I didn't break any laws, it was like, oh, you're going to fight this, Right? Like, you didn't even give, like, the DUI apology, which is not pleading guilty, but acknowledging, okay, I was tripping. You're right. Right? He didn't even give us that one. He was on the, I did not break any law, which means that whoever's in his camp is ready to be like, yeah, remember that time me and you went out? Buddy?
Yeah, exactly. We got you on video. But, you know, but that's also where we are in today's culture as well. When you start breaking things down, one of my favorite, which is to say least favorite, responses that you're hearing today from everybody, whether you're talking about whether it's the president on down to every other rich person in the billionaire class, I did nothing illegal. Well, that's one hell of a response. How about something unethical or something immoral, something I shouldn't have done? If we live in a time of deregulation anyway, we live in a time where things are all being, where all bets are off anyway, if that's your response, then you essentially don't have much of a moral compass anyway. You know, and I know, anybody who's ever been in any level of a big city or sophistication or wherever, you all know there's an underside to certain massage parlors. You know it. I know it. Remember Jerry Rice got busted in one of them in Palo Alto when I think that he was at the end of his career. He got busted in a massage parlor in California doing whatever they do in those places. And so the I don't know or I didn't know response, you're a billionaire. You don't do a house call? That's the only place you would go to? I mean, come on. You know exactly why you're there.
That is the one thing.
Who'd be kidding?
Yeah, that is the one thing about it is, like, I wonder if there's, what else Bob Kraft, like, only spends, like, $100 on. Right? Like, when's the last time Bob Kraft ordered a bottle of wine that was less than
$100? $59. I mean, once again, and this is the thing, and to have that out there. Now, I do have to say something else, and I'm disturbed about this part of it. The number of people, and I understand the impulse, the reflex for sort of equal justice. The idea that, well, you know, if you're going to do that to Tiger Woods, if you're going to splash somebody's name out there with allegations, then Bob Kraft deserves the allegations to be splashed out on him, too. I understand that. However, I don't believe that in a just society, if we believe in innocence before guilt, if the presumption of innocence means anything, the way the police handled that, the way they were dancing in the end zone, we got one, you know, with this, there's a lot of names on this list. I mean, it's you're already poisoning the entire, you're poisoning the guy's reputation. And if this is how your system is supposed to work, I don't think police should be out there gleeful when you arrest somebody. I mean, it's like I found that to be distasteful, not for Bob Kraft, but for everybody. For anybody out there where this is supposed to be part of the system, where you're supposed to go through a process. I mean, he's already done no matter what.
Yeah, like it was a dope on the table sort of scenario, right? And the one thing I wonder about this, and this is what I imagine is keeping Kraft's lawyers up at night. So you're telling me that there's this massage parlor that seems otherwise nondescript, and it's got all these big billionaires types that are patronizing the establishment according to law enforcement.
Exactly. And why are you doing it? Yeah. Why are you going there? If you're a billionaire when you could essentially go anywhere, why are you going there? More than likely, in my humble opinion, you're going there because you know the people who are there are powerless, that they're not dropping a dime on you, that if you go to some high-priced American escort or whatever, they got family members or whomever who know who you are. And then they can blackmail you. But if you go to the low of the low of the low, people who aren't even supposed to be in the country, people who are being kidnapped, people who are being trafficked, they don't know Bob Kraft from a hole in the wall, and they certainly don't have the power to blackmail him. So don't tell me that you don't know what you're getting for your $59. You know exactly why you're there.
But here's where I'd be shocked if I was them. Normally, people with that level of money, when the law gets a little too close to them, somebody is in a position to come and shut this down. Like, who made the call to be like, oh, it's Bob Kraft and these other rich dudes? No, we taking them down, too, because normally they can stop this from happening before it even starts.
Well, exactly right. But that's also when they live in that celebrity community, because you've got other famous people living in there. And let's also not forget that little thing called class resentment. There are people, and we know them in law enforcement, who sort of live to take down big people. What's the worst thing you can say to a cop when you get stopped? Don't you know who I am?
Yeah.
And those guys, they dig in deeper. So there is a relationship going on there, and it's not necessarily a positive one, where if you are rank and file and you're making your $40,000 doing a thankless job, there's a part of you that wants to see the guy in his private jet zoom in and get what he's got coming to him.
Yeah, because that was the thing that got me, is I was just like, I am really kind of stunned that the people that they say they have on this list, that law enforcement would dare go at them in the way that they did, right? Like, we assume a level of privilege that they did not get on this one. Like, I mean, in the end, it's not going to be like some prison sentence or anything like that. You get caught up on something involving prostitution, the price is entirely reputation.
Well, exactly right. And it's entirely reputational. And the other part of that, too, is most times, whether we're talking about something like prostitution, whether we're talking about drugs, whether we're talking about steroids, normally you end up getting caught because they weren't looking for you. You just ended up in somebody's book or on somebody's videotape at the wrong place at the wrong time. Baseball guys who got busted in Biogenesis and the rest of those places, they weren't looking for baseball players. They were looking for Tony Bosch, and it was like, hey, what's A-Rod doing here? And that's how you end up getting caught.
That's a funny thought to have, that we're just studying this one thing. It's like, hey, wait a minute. Is that Alex Rodriguez?
That guy. He went 3-for-4 last night. that's what happened. I don't think that any of the steroid guys were targeted. They were at the wrong place hooking up with the wrong people. I mean, the entire Balco thing was money laundering.
Right.
And they went into the money. They broke into Balco. They had the raid out there in San Francisco or down in the peninsula, and they looked on the board, and it's like B Bonds, not the B Bonds, is it? J Giambi? Wait a minute.
Right. Those were not master criminals, by the way. Just in case anybody has it like Red Game of Shadows and all that stuff, we were not dealing with no master scoundrels in the Balco situation.
No, you were dealing with Tower of Power.
Yes!
Yeah, with Tower of Power branching out.
How is Moore not made of the fact that Victor Conti played bass for Tower of Power? It turned into, like, the comic book create a superhero dude.
Exactly. It turned into this little Keystone Cop thing. If you're going to make a movie on Tonya Harding, you got to have one on Victor Conti.
There's got to be a way, right?
It has the killer soundtrack.
And the dude who's just walking around the Olympics with, like, a doctor bag, and nobody knows who he is. Just there.
Exactly.
Right. And that's the funny thing about sports, too. There are so many people around various leagues who are just there, right? Where everybody right. knows their names, but nobody actually knows what it is they do.
What do you do?
Yeah,
man. And that's exactly. And that's the thing that teams are trying to ward off against, because let's face it, when you sign a guy, once they become big, or you sign someone to a free agent deal or whatever, you're not just signing the player. Now you're taking on the player's lifestyle, the player's entourage. I need access for this dude. I need access for that dude. And they're all trying to start up some side business. They all think they're geniuses. And so, and where are your high-priced clients? They're in the locker room. So all of a sudden, now you're out there. It's not just one guy who's this other guy's guy, you know, with the entourage. Now he's actually doing business in your locker room. And that's how the FBI calls you.
Yeah, Mr. Let me holler at you.
Exactly.
Hey, man, let me holler at you for a second, man. I'm cool with him. But look, man, I just thought I had this thing that you might be interested
right.
in.
I did a funny story years ago called The Money Chronicles. And it was all about what happens when you're a professional athlete, you got more money than you ever need. What do? And how is your life different? And all these other different parts of the story. And I remember talking to Kevin Millar about it one day when he was with the Red Sox. And I was like, well, actually it was Johnny Damon. Kevin was a different story. And Johnny, I said, what's the biggest difference? He said, the biggest difference is that the minute you sign a big deal, every person you know has the killer kick-ass business idea, and they need you to fund it. You become the seed money for every, I got a great idea for, like, you know, a ping pong and fried chicken restaurant. It's a can't miss. And then everybody else has ideas, and especially, like, I mean, that's how Victor Conti got involved in the first place. New guy who said, hey, this pharmacy stuff ain't that complicated. And then on you go.
And you know what? And I can't even be mad at these dudes, right? Like why do we go to the banks? Because the banks have money. Why are they That's coming right. at these guys? Because you have money and
you have money.
You don't have the screening process of a bank. right?
That's
like,
right.
like no matter what it is, I never really get mad when people ask me for money and stuff. Cause look, if you need money, you go to a place where you know somebody got money and you happen to be that person. This is just like,
that's
this is just going to be the nature of the game. People are going to come to you and ask you for this money. Cause I know if I had one of those ideas, I damn sure at the very least, I might not ask for the money, but I'm going to tell you about it.
Well, that was Charles Barkley's thing. I remember I saw Charles Barkley in the airport in Atlanta one day. I was going home. He was going to Philly, and I saw him in Atlanta. And he was like all whacked out because I was like, "What's the matter?" He's like, "Yeah, man, I had to have this like family intervention, man, because you know people be spending my money, man." And I was like, "What happened?" And he was like, "Listen," he says, "You always got to have someone to say no." Always. But the problem is, the real problem isn't always the hanger-ons. The problem is your family, because they can get you at Thanksgiving. They can get you at the barbecue. They can get you at cookout. They get you at all other places. They get you at Christmas. So your financial guy can't step in and say, "Yeah, no, I think that's kind of a bad investment." Family gets you right, you know, you hanging over the stove about to pour, you know, make a plate for yourself, and it's like, "I got an idea for you. Come sit with me."
And nobody knows their idea is not great. Like, think about it this way. Think about how many people who don't have money have people trying to sell them on ideas, right? Now, granted, those ideas are normally some form of a pyramid scheme, but they're even selling you on the idea. Like, this is my favorite pyramid scheme story that I can think of. My homeboy tells this story, and he said he was mad, not because the dude was trying to push him on a pyramid scheme, but because the dude wouldn't tell him that it was a pyramid scheme. And so what it was is there was this juice, and the juice had all these like wonderful health benefits and all of this stuff. And my man was like, "Okay, cool. So how much does the juice cost?" He's like, "Yeah, the juice costs whatever. But see, that's not the thing. What I sell you is this certificate, and this certificate allows you to sell certificates to people to then sell the juice. So the certificate gives you permission to sell the juice, but nobody actually sells the juice. Everybody just sells certificates." And he was just like, "Yo, just tell me it's a pyramid scheme. Don't try to get me.
You're like the Oracle in the Matrix or something. There is no spoon. There is no juice.
Right.
There is no juice.
There's no juice. And I really was curious about the juice when I first started hearing the story. I'm like, "Oh, okay. Oh, wait, no, okay. There's no juice. But that's regular people get hit up on these ideas.
Exactly. Can you imagine, can you imagine just at that level, the number of people who are coming at you with ideas and I'm a need? And Barkley was like, "Look, here's a problem, especially when you're black. You're the one that made it, and you got all kinds of guilt. You're carrying guilt." He goes, "I can't tell you the amount of money I've given out over the last 25 years because of guilt. It's all guilt because..." And especially when they hit you with this one, "It can't miss. I just need a little help." I'm like, "You know what? I'd rather be broke, come to think of it. Nobody's hitting me up for money right now. Nobody."
No. And they also sell you on "you know me" when that is often the problem.
Exactly. "Because I know you is why I'm saying no to you."
Dude, just that's the thing, man. And everybody knows you got money. Like, I guess that's the thing about an athletic
job. Well, your salary's public. If you're Manny Machado right now, everybody knows you got $300 million coming your way.
Right.
Guaranteed. I mean, we can guess how much money Bob Kraft has, but we actually don't know how much money Bob Kraft has.
No.
His money's not public.
But then it's funny because even though in the Bob Kraft world, he ain't got a guy hitting him up asking for like $50,000 to get off the ground on something. Bob Kraft's got cats like, "Look, I know about this investment.
I know about this investment. We're all getting rich." Exactly. "And I'm putting in and you putting in."
Yeah.
"And we're all putting in.
All I need from you is a couple $100 million.
That's right.
Which Bob Kraft legitimately could peel off.
That's right.
Nothing would change.
That's right. Well, and especially, I remember George Steinbrenner back in the day, Major League Baseball, when they were starting up MLB.com and MLB Advanced Media, essentially what they were asking for was every team had to put in $1 million investment. 30 teams, $1 million, $30 million. And Steinbrenner was like, "Nah, dog. The Yankees do things the Yankee way, and we do not share." And they had to convince him, "George, everybody's putting in on this." He's like, "Nope." Finally, he had to put in. And of course, MLB Advanced Media is like worth $7 billion right now. And George didn't want to put in his million.
Rich people, still kind of like us.
Rich people, you know, people are funny.
All right, we'll be back to talk about Colin Kaepernick in just a second. But first, guys, 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. It's a big problem. Thing is, once you notice hair loss, it's too late. What you want to do is try to keep the hair you have, not try to replace the hair that you've lost. I mean, how are you going to feel a year from now if it's business as usual up there? Why are you going to watch your hairline do the moonwalk when you can turn to medicine and science? And the solution? It's for Hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. They got well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions. They help you keep your hair. It's no snake oil pills. That's stuff from the gas station. It's prescription solutions that are backed by science. You don't have to go sit in a waiting room waiting on a doctor. Save hours going to ForHims.com. You'll answer a few quick questions. A doctor will review and can prescribe you. Products come directly to your door. Now, order now. My listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This will cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to ForHims.com/Bomani. 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 All right, so Howard, Colin Kaepernick has this habit. He likes to make big news right when I go on vacation. Like that first column I wrote on Kaepernick, I wrote it on vacation because he did it the Saturday before my birthday or something like that, and I was going on vacation. And then right before I go on vacation again, he has, we find out that there's been a settlement between he and the NFL. And I wonder, because I think there were a lot of immediate quick takes from a lot of people. But now that we've had a little time to let this sit, like, what's your read on this?
Well, I still think we need more time. My initial read on it was I was stunned by the number of people whose immediate reaction, and I'm talking about people in the business, not just people on social media or your friends, whatever. I mean people in our business, people that we cover, people who we go to get our news and our information from their industry. Their immediate reaction was, doesn't this make Cap a sellout? If he's taken their money, how can he take a moral ground on this? If he's taken their money, how can he get mad at the Players Coalition for taking ownership's money when he just took ownership's money? And I'm like, your comprehension is a little suspect right now.
That was so dumb.
You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm trying to be kind, but let's break this down. Colin Kaepernick did not sue the NFL for the right to protest. Colin Kaepernick sued the NFL for the right to work. Therefore, any monies recouped from that right to work lawsuit belong to him. And you wrote a great column on this about, you know, what is he supposed to do? And he's supposed to take that money, which was owed to him because they did deny his right to work, though they admitted no wrongdoing. That money goes into his pocket. Well, why doesn't he give it to charity? Why would he give more of his money to charity? That's his money. It was just astounding to me, and it struck me that, once again, the lightning rod that is Colin Kaepernick is that Colin will represent whatever position you want him to represent. If you never liked him, then you dog him out on this settlement. If you liked him and supported him, then this was this great, great victory and triumph. When really what it is that it was a victory and triumph for him, because if you go back, and it's not that long ago, so we can go back to these things, the number of people who said that he was not competent at what he did. Not just not competent, but was barely a backup. If these numbers are accurate, and if the numbers are accurate, he got $60 to $80 million, roughly a four-year deal, 2 years that he lost, 2 years that they're not going to pay him for. They're not going to let him, they're going to pay him, but they're not going to play him, because I don't think any team's going to sign him. Maybe they will. That's essentially $15 million a year, which is roughly starter money. So to me, that settlement, whether they admit wrongdoing or not, is we know you are an NFL starter. Here is roughly $15 million a year. And the reason why I picked the 4 years is because at cap's level, it's not going to be three or two, because then you're paying, then that settlement breaks down to $20 or $30 million a year. And he's not in that category. Even if you look at him and say, okay, we're gonna look at you as a five-year contract, but they don't even give out 5-year contracts that much anymore because they can cut you anyway. So even that, you're still looking at $12 million a year. So a double-digit million-dollar settlement is essentially the NFL's way of saying, you were a starter, and we denied you the right to start at quarterback of the National Football League. So imagine my shock and surprise when people would say, oh, man, he sold out because he took the money. What I also find sort of interesting on this as well is if that $60 to $80 million figure is correct, that's roughly the same money. It's pretty close to the $89 million that the Players Coalition got. And the difference between that money and this money is that the Players Coalition money was the equivalent of $89 million. So there's an actual chance that Cap got more raw dollars in a lawsuit than the Players Coalition got actually working with the owners.
Now, that is something I had not considered. I have no idea how much money he got from this lawsuit, though. I've heard plausible explanations on both sides as to why it might be in line with that $60 to $80 million number or why it might be lower. Because it is kind of hard to believe that if the smoking gun existed that Garagos talked about, that they would not push for the exposure of that. But I also wonder if the man just got tired. Like, this has got to be exhausting, man.
Well, once again, going back to George Steinbrenner, maybe all roads, like we say all roads go to the Godfather. At some point when you have trouble with life, there's a quote from the Godfather that will address whatever issue you have in life. Maybe things today are going back to George Steinbrenner. 2003, 2004, I'm covering the Red Sox. I just got done covering the Yankees. And it was back in the day when they were the superpowers, when Red Sox and Yankees were the everything of everything, and everybody was going to go there. Randy Johnson was going to the Yankees, and Curt Schilling was going to the Red Sox, and Contreras and A-Rod, and everybody wanted to play there. And so Steinbrenner's position on when it came down to making a deal was take the bird in hand. Always take the bird in hand. And maybe this bird in hand, if you're calling Kaepernick, is, look, we can go down this rabbit hole if you want, but they're handing you $60 million right now. Do you want the bird in hand in terms? Do you want the bird in hand in terms of the money, or do you want the whole end game? Which, by the way, you might win and get awarded a dollar. Let's not forget the USFL. Let's not forget all the different lawsuits where you're expecting justice and don't get it. And once again, for everything that we're talking about in terms of justice and Cap being the martyr for his generation and all of that, let's not forget this was an employment lawsuit. So from an employment lawsuit standpoint, maybe being conservative was the smart move. I'm going to hand you $70 million, or $50 million, or however many million it is, but it's going to be more million than what you have right now. How much further do you want to go with this? And maybe he's just tired and he's like, you know what, enough. I'll take it. Be done with it.
I also think the Players Coalition comparison becomes interesting because I think that people have forgotten what some of the issues were with the Players Coalition and what they got. Because they did, like, if you talk to guys who are on the coalition, they can sell you pretty well on, like, look, we got a decent amount of money. They can compare it to the money that's for, like, the Salute to Service for the breast cancer initiatives and stuff like that. And it is not that they got nothing from the NFL. The thing was that the NFL had a ridiculous level of power over this because they had the majority of the seats on the board that's going to make these decisions and everything else. Like, that was always the place for me at the Player Coalition where I was slowed down. And I thought that the question with Jenkins about taking money was whether or not he took money and then as a result decided that he would no longer protest.
Absolutely.
And that's a huge distinction between the idea that Kaepernick won this lawsuit no matter what the lawsuit was for.
That's right. And two other things when it came to the Players Coalition. One was, did you even need to go to them for money in the first place? You're all millionaires. You all have contacts. I mean, these guys, they're not your father's football players. These guys have contacts in the tech world. They've got contacts all over the business world. They've got contacts around the globe at their level. They didn't even try to go raise money independently. They immediately went right back to the nest. So there was a lack of independence there that I thought was lacking, that was troublesome, especially when you add in the relationship, the labor relationship between owners and players, the fact that you've got the concussion lawsuit, you've got all these other things in terms of not having enough say at the table in terms of discipline and everything else. So why would you go to them as a first response, as a first impulse? You go to the owners, the very owners who are blackballing one of your own. To me, in terms of principle, from a labor standpoint, I had problems with that. The second piece of it that was problematic in terms of making this distinction, too, was, you're right, the number of seats they had on the board, they didn't even have the power to make the decisions of where they were going to go and what they were going to support and all of that. They essentially still were in a position where they had to compromise. But the other point I was going to make was that that money they got from the NFL was simply a match, because the players themselves had to put in money too. They had to go out and canvass to get commitments from all the players to put money in at a certain threshold. And if the players didn't contribute a certain threshold, then they didn't get the $89 million from the owners. So I always thought it was a bad deal from the start, but I'm not them.
Tricky thing is, man, you can't make them care, right?
No, exactly right. Like, I think that from that split, and I also heard from somebody else once it went down, a very prominent person in the NFL, come send me a message saying something like, well, doesn't Eric Reed now owe Malcolm Jenkins an apology? Because as we know, when the Eagles played the Panthers, Eric and Malcolm got into it, and he started calling him a sellout on the field. So doesn't this make Eric Reed a sellout as well, taking the owner's money? And I'm like, no. This is a lawsuit over employment. If the lawsuit was over protest and they settled and took the money, then maybe that's a different story. Maybe you're talking, and instead you're like, no, from a principled standpoint, you don't settle. Maybe. But I do find it interesting that people feel the need, and if you've ever been in a legal situation, the burden hand is usually where people go because it's the certainty. You at least get something. You're going to walk away with something, something that's close to your idea of justice. Maybe Colin Kaepernick always had a number in mind, and maybe they exceeded that number, and he was like, game over. I got what I'm looking for. Because he was making $11 million, I think, his last season. So if those numbers are accurate and he leaves at $15 million for a few years, and that money's guaranteed, because let's not forget, in the NFL, he might have got cut after 2 years or 1 year or whatever. Or he might have gotten hurt, or who knows. So maybe he had a number in mind. I guess my point of all of this is that we don't have enough information, but it is interesting to me the number of people whose immediate reaction was somehow that Colin had shorted himself. I mean, the man hasn't played a down since January 1st, 2017. What more is he expected to do, which was the point in your column as well?
Yeah, like, I do wonder that, and this can happen with all, once you become a figure in the way that he is, it is now expected that you be perfect. Like, one thing I did, and looking back on it, that I think is interesting is, not necessarily missteps per se, but in 2016, I think he was afforded latitude on some things that he could not get away with in 2018. So politically, for a lot of people who support him, the idea that he did not vote, that was a way for a lot of people to jump off the cause for him. But I think he was the one who kind of equivocated the two presidential candidates at the time. And
that's right.
People go hard now to go find the people who did that and point at them and say, hey, look at what you did, right? People who are on that side of the aisle. Kaepernick is not a guy who catches that one, even though he's one of the loudest on that.
He doesn't catch it. And it's a really, watching him, he is a fascinating character. He is a fascinating person in this story. And the story has become, it's not as flat as it was. Now it's much more nuanced. And when I was working on The Heritage, there were people who were extremely critical of him when I first did the interviews. There were people who told me that they thought that he just got caught up in a storm that he knew nothing about, that he was trying to impress his girlfriend, that he had no idea what he was getting into, and that he was an entitled, spoiled athlete who sort of just kind of ran into history. It's like it was an accident. It was the squirrel finding the nut, right? The blind squirrel. So then, as the story continued and as he started to move towards sainthood, those same people called me back and they were like, hey man, would you kind of mind taking my name off of this? I don't want to be the one looking like I'm criticizing him. And I thought that was interesting, because I think there were plenty of things that Colin could be criticized for. For example, I do think it's difficult for him. I've been, what's the best way to put it? I've been conflicted with several things over the past year. I wasn't sure how I felt about the Nike thing. the Nike ad. People loved it, and they trumpeted it, and they thought this was this great, great thing. I didn't like it for several reasons. One of the reasons was I'm watching this ad, you know, stand for something, even if it means sacrificing everything, and I'm thinking, well, I don't think you sacrificed everything, especially if I compare you to Tommy Smith and John Carlos. They were broke. Tommy Smith, I mean, John Carlos was a security guard. He was a busboy. I mean, let's have a little bit of historical perspective here. The other thing that bothered me about it was that that ad did not, it was aspirational, but it never spoke about why he was doing it. There was no protest. There was no nod to protest. There was no symbolism at all in it. In fact, part of the ad actually had him standing and doing his voiceover, and there was a hologram of the American flag on a building behind him. I was like, wait a minute. So that struck me as a little Nike hocus pocus, the same way the Nike Serena Williams ad that just came the other day, same thing. I'm like, okay, you're going to show Megan Rapinoe and you're going to show people saluting the flag, but you're not going to show the fact that Megan Rapinoe took a knee. So you got Nike, and you got Nike playing both sides of the fence on this, and let's not forget that Nike is also the official outfitter of virtually every sport, especially the NFL, so they're business partners. Let's also not forget that Nike in 2016, when Colin took his knee, and in 2017, when the NFL didn't hire him, Nike didn't say a word, and he was still a client. Nike has never come out and said anything in support of Colin. So to make it seem like Nike was some sort of ally in the resistance was nonsense. So there are all kinds of things there. I think the other thing that you watch this and you say, okay, things that you could get away with then that you couldn't get away with now. Now we look at this, and I think that he tweeted something out the other day that's like a hashtag #True to 7. And I think it's great in some ways. I think it's important. I think that when I look at what happened post-Nike, the number of municipalities and police and businesses that then tried to bully Nike by saying, we're not even going to carry your gear. I'm like, why are you trying to destroy this man? So you're actually going to hurt your own business to prove some point that a guy who never broke the law deserves your scorn. So I thought it was important that Nike did something in that regard. I wasn't quite sure to what extent I was ready to give Nike credit, but I'm glad they did something, because Kaepernick's opposition was essentially trying to ruin not only his livelihood, but then trying to take down Nike as well. I'm like, these people are out of their minds. And they cheer Kareem Hunt, and they cheer, you know, all the players who have all of their transgressions on field. I'm like, this is just, it wasn't right to me. But at the same time, I'm also saying, let's also not forget why he's out here. We're not out here so Colin Kaepernick could, well, what's the best way to put it? We're not out there because, you know, so he can have photos with famous people wearing his jersey, or so we're supporting him working, even though we believe he should work. That's not the goal. The goal, the center of all of this, is still Philando Castile. It's still Eric Garner. It's still police misconduct. And that seems to be fading a little bit, or maybe even a lot. And it's been replaced by the NFL hiring or not hiring Colin. Problematic to me.
Yeah, and that touches on a couple things I wanted to touch on with that. One is the idea that saying he didn't know what he was getting into could be deemed a criticism is interesting to me, because I don't think there was any way for him to know what it was.
Yeah, because Martin Luther King Jr. knew exactly what was going to transpire in 1955. We all knew what was coming next, right?
Yeah. Like LeBron James didn't know what was coming with the decision. Right?
Right?
Like, there was, and it's a different question as to whether or not, if he really knew what was coming, whether he would have carried it the same way. That's a fair question to ask, but.
But it's immaterial, isn't it?
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Like, we're talking about, you know, what was still, I guess he was like 28, 29 when he did this. Like, we're talking about what was still a very young man. So what if he didn't know what he was getting into? The thing I'll always give him is that once he realized what he was getting into, it ain't like he backed down, right? He was like, oh, okay, I'm here now. All right, I guess these are the things that I'm going to say now. Cool. Do it. Boom. Yeah. Go. And then 2 years of silence. And I don't know how anybody feels that comfortable filling in the space of those 2 years without some real serious access.
No, exactly right. And he's right, because let's face it, this goes back to what we were saying earlier about the number of people that if you ride with Colin, if you're on Colin's side, then Colin will represent you one way. And if you don't, then he can't do anything right. You got to give that man credit whether you like him or whether you don't, for the fact that he didn't back down. And people were waiting for him to back down. The NFL was waiting for him to back down. The NFL was waiting for him to come back on his hands and knees, and he didn't. And that, to me, told you that he was for real. And he was willing to pay the cost. And that's somewhat of a, I don't mean to be contradictory about it, but that is something that is extremely important. He didn't have to be destitute the way John Carlos was, but he did walk the walk. He was willing to pay whatever price needed to be paid, and he paid it. And he also sued them. He sued them when, you're suing an entity that is essentially, in a lot of ways, omnipotent. They never pay any price financially for anything that they do, whether it's Ray Rice or concussions or whatever, or Bob Kraft. They keep raking in money. They very rarely lose suits against players. A collusion suit is one of the most difficult suits to prove, and yet who's still standing? So, to me, when you look at that part of the Colin Kaepernick story, Colin Kaepernick had a grievance. And that grievance, no matter how many people tried to criticize him for it and tried to support the NFL, oh, he's not an NFL starter, he's not even a backup, he's not good, it's all performance. No. They went and signed Jay Cutler to a $10 million contract, and he was retired. So when you start looking at this as a story or as a case, Colin Kaepernick stood tall, and you really can't take that from him.
Do you have any guess where this goes from here? Like, I keep hearing the stories about talks with the XFL or talks with the AAF, and I'm just like, there's no way that's going to happen for a number of reasons.
Or talks with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, like that one I find more likely, honestly, than the AAF or these other ones, because simply they can't afford him.
That's right. And people said before, well, if Colin Kaepernick really loved the game, why doesn't he go play in the CFL? Because he don't want to play in the CFL.
No. Or on top of it, how about this? You and I both do jobs that are remarkably similar to the jobs that we did, say, 10 years ago for less money. And we were probably pretty happy for the money that we were making at that time 10 years ago to do what is, in effect, the same job. That don't mean I'm about to do that again, bro. That ain't what this is. I ain't going back to doing this for $39,000 working 6 days a week. No.
Nor does it, and not only that, but that is it's a very anti-worker thing. And this is what we do. We've allowed business to be so tilted toward management that we feel like we have no self-worth. I mean, zero self-worth. So for Colin Kaepernick to do that would mean for him to say, yeah, you're right, I'm not a starter, I'm no good, let me go take wherever. I mean, no disrespect to the CFL, but it's not the NFL. And in a lot of ways, it would be sort of an admission that he wasn't at that caliber. Or people want him to say, oh, well, if you really, really loved the game, this is my job. This is not me going out and, well, if you really love the Sandlot, you'd go back to the Sandlot. We're not talking about the Sandlot. This is actual business. And here's a man who understood his self-worth. His self-worth was, I am an NFL starter, and the NFL is denying me the right to play football. And if I'm not going to be compensated at the highest level as one of the best people in the world to do this, then I'm going to take legal action against the people who aren't allowing me to do it. It's not like, oh, man, I'm going to need a place to go play football. It's not that at all. And so you start to look at this, and I think it'll happen even more and more as the years go on. We'll look back and realize that the responses to him have been absolute nonsense in so many ways.
Also, the XFL is a setup. They started off by saying this league where everybody going to stand for the anthem. They sending you up people to throw stuff at you, bro.
Absolutely.
Like the wrestling man running this? I mean, that setup looks obvious to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And once again, I think that what you're really looking at with these types of stories is it still comes down to the same reason why Colin Kaepernick took a knee in the first place. You're still talking about power and control and who gets to control the athlete. And I agree with you as well. I tend to think that if he's going to land, it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up in Carolina. They don't have a quarterback. And when is Cam coming back? Like, maybe, and I don't think he's coming back this season, is he?
Well, we'll see. We don't really have an idea of it right now. But I do wonder this, though. If David Tepper decided that that was what he wanted to do, he did what they agreed. If he decided he wanted to bring Kaepernick in also, I do wonder who would be the person in Charlotte to come tap him on the shoulder and be like, hey, man, let me tell you a few things about the local market that you might not know. Not to say that it would stop him, but I assure you somebody would be like, hey, man, are you sure? Are you positive?
Are you sure about this? Yeah, I tend to think that the settlement he got was a handshake to say goodbye forever, that we're square. The Colin Kaepernick matter is now settled, and you out. I don't think that there. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I didn't think he was ever going to play again in 2017 at the end of the 2016 season. I don't think I've changed my mind on that. I mean, obviously, I don't know, but I ended up thinking as well the number of people that I did think made an interesting point. Why would he want to play for these people? After this is all said and done, that is your love of the game argument right there. Why would you want to go to Stephen Ross's stadium and play at Miami? Why would you want to go to Washington and play Dan Snyder or play for play in front of Jerry Jones and put money in their pocket while you're risking your body? You got your money. You got your vindication. You've got your morality. Do you want to engage? Do you want to walk into their locker rooms again and have to listen to their BS and put your body at risk and all of that? If you do that, that tells me you do it because you love football and you miss playing. That, to me, is the love of the game argument.
Yeah, and again, you don't have to love this. Like, that is one thing that we are tripping on is we really do ask these cats.
You don't have to love it.
Oh, yeah, don't you love getting your kidney smashed? Yeah, tell me you love it, baby. Tell me you love it. What?
I remember asking Jose Canseco that one day. He hit a walk-off against the A's when he was playing for the Blue Jays. And I remember walking up to him, and I said, you know, I remember he was talking. He hit a home run and was, like, complaining about something afterwards, even though he won a, you know, game winner. And so I'm sitting next to him, and I was like, Jose, do you play this game because you're good at it or because you love it? And he said, where else am I going to make $7 million? I was like, touche, I'll see you later. You know, where else am I going to make $7 million? And I think
that was a wrap.
That was the perfect, exactly. That's not a sandwich. That's a wrap.
Hey, there is nothing like when somebody just hits you with such very simple duh logic.
Right? I mean, we get paid a lot of money to do this. You go hang out in Washington Heights on a Saturday morning, they're doing this for nothing.
Where else? Like, that boy Sam said when he got franchise tagged. He was like, yeah, they franchise tagged me. I'm not going to make this money working at McDonald's. He's like, yeah, I'd like a long-term contract. That would be great. But in the meantime.
I'm going to need. Well, and let's face it, even though, you know, all jokes aside, think about what's happening in baseball right now. This is one of the reasons why the labor battle isn't what it used to be. Are you really going to go walk for a $17 million qualifying offer? You like, you know what, honey, man, turn off the spigot. We going out right now. You know, we're going on strike because you offered me 1 year, $17 million.
They are making a lot more money. Like, the stakes were different when, like, the minimum salary was, like, 65 Gs.
And they weren't getting a pension, and they weren't getting health care. They weren't getting anything. Right. I mean, I was talking to Ricky Henderson last week. I said, Ricky, I mean, your rookie year, man, you make $21,000. He said, $17,500. $17,500 for Ricky Henderson. And so, not $17.5 million, $17,500, 1979. So, yeah, this is the stuff, and it's not to make light of it, but these are the battles that the players have. The players have to find, do you have a line in the sand issue that's going to rally you together, that's going to put you in a position where you actually feel like you can win some of your gains back that you've conceded? let's face it, they haven't had any labor problems since, I mean, not labor problems, they haven't had a walkout or a strike or a lockout since 1994.
After basically having one every 3 years.
After basically having one. You know, Ricky went through all of them. Ricky went through almost all of them. He missed two of them, 72, 76, right? And so not having that, the real issue is going to be, okay, I guess it's got to be service time. Can you control me for 6 years and not pay me on the seventh? Are you compensating me for what I've done or what I'm going to do? And are the players willing to hold true on that, that you've got a new level of management? Nobody, I mean, I think what? Ichiro's the oldest player in the league. He was a rookie in 2001, so he wasn't there in 95. There's not a single active player who was there for the last one. So, and these guys are also all born post-1981, where they're, you know, they haven't grown up in any walk of life with labor being a real positive, strong, necessary force in their lives, in their perspective. So they don't have the same relationship to labor that the old guard did. So when you walk into a baseball clubhouse or you walk into a basketball or football locker room and you start asking them about what their line in the sand issues are, they really don't have any, because the money is enormous. So, okay, we're going to get 52% total revenues, or we're going to get 49% total revenues. You're all still millionaires. Now, does that mean you're not getting exploited? No, different story. Exploitation is a different word that people don't understand. Exploitation means, am I getting my fair share of the available revenues? So if you got $20 billion and I got $20 million, I'm still being exploited if I deserve more. Doesn't mean I'm poor. It means I'm being exploited. Does that mean you actually walk out and stop the game?
And you know? And what's interesting, and like we take that to the Kaepernick thing, is depending on how that played out, like if all that stuff had happened right in advance of the CBA that's going to expire, I think, in 2021, it would have been a very interesting tenor as related, because that would be a line in the sand, except for a percentage of the players that is probably not the majority.
That's right.
And that's where it would have got weird.
Well, and let's also not forget, too, right, that you're dealing with a generation of player, whether you're talking NBA or whether you're talking football, that when they saw inequalities, namely the rookies, whether you're talking about the Glenn Rice contract back in 94, 95, or whether you're talking about the rookie contracts in 04, 05, 06 with the NFL players, what did they do? Did they say, no, this is a line in the sand issue for us? They said, we're going after our own. And it was the players, it was the veterans who wanted the rookie wage scale.
Yep.
They went after their own people. They didn't say, no, you guys, we put our time in, ownership. We're veterans, ownership, and you can't do this. You're undercutting our labor. They went after their own players.
Rank,
not quite
and
the
file
normal
red.
Ray story you're looking at.
Rank and file red of the union. That's why LeBron and Chris Paul are like, no, bruh, we got it from here.
Well, that's right, and that's the reason why the baseball union had always been so successful, is because the stars ran the show. And it's not 87 where Joe Montana and Joe Klecko and those guys are crossing the line. In baseball, nah, man, you know, you had Dave Winfield out there and Tommy Glavin out there and Greg Maddux out there. And if they're not crossing, you're not crossing.
Right. In football, the cats are like, man, y'all know y'all going to lose. Like, that was their problem. They could never sell their guys on the idea that maybe, just maybe, they would win.
Right. You got to get those guys together and, you know, get them in that Ray Lewis circle. Together, brothers, we going to win. They're like, nah, we're not going to win.
Nah, like, come on, man, you know we're not
going to
win.
We're going to lose.
They're like, bro, you know you broke. You ain't got
no
money.
They lasted 21 days. 21 days. That's how long they hung in there in 87. I remember talking to Gene Upshaw about that in the parking lot at Redskins Park. And I was like, and that was right when I think after Bryant Gumbel called him a lapdog or something. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm with Gene in the parking lot, and he's like, man, I want a piece of Bryant Gumbel. I'm like, go get him. And he said, look, the last time I went charging up the hill, I charged up the hill. And I turned around and nobody was behind me. I ain't doing that again. So if these brothers want money, I will get my players money. I will get them what they want. But I am not charging up the hill by myself again.
Got a point, Gene.
It's true. You know, it's like Warner Brothers, like Bugs Bunny or something. You know, Yosemite Sam, charge, and there's nobody behind him. Go up there by himself. And and then get shot.
I ain't got no argument against that. Like, nobody could call Gene a sellout for that. And Gene's last CBA was a resounding victory.
Yep.
You got that last one for Tagliabue. Boo. That's what got you the lockout.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you start looking at this stuff and you start saying, okay, and that's one of the things that bothered me about the whole Kaepernick Players Coalition stuff, too, where people would be like, where's the union on this? Where's the union on this? I'm like, where are you on this? I mean, we live in a time right now where labor is under siege everywhere. Go look at the Supreme Court. Go look at a few labor Supreme Court decisions. Go look at the Janus decision. Go look at the Chicago decision. You know, labor is getting hammered all over the country, and people are going to think the NFL Players Association is somehow exempt from that? I mean, the baseball union, which is supposedly the strongest sports union in the world, they're running for cover right now. They're trying to regroup and create a new generation of players that recognize that, as Don Fear told me back in the day, the game is not Red Sox Yankees. The game is owners versus players. And if you can't instill that in the players, then you're not going to win anymore.
Yeah, well, they need another jerk, right? Like, the thing you got in a guy like Fear is like, yeah, I'm the bad guy. Cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be that. That's what I do.
Don did not care. And Don Fear is one of, if not the smartest person I've ever met in sports. Don, as what did Warren Oates say in the heat of the night? Man, he got no more smile than a turnip. And he didn't. And did not want anyone to, you know, he didn't care. He didn't want anyone to know how smart he was, or he was not going to be engaging. He was there for one reason, and that was to protect the interests of the Major League Baseball players. He's like, you want to hate me? Go ahead. But we don't lose.
I remember when the hockey players hired him. I was like, oh, so y'all for real? Okay.
Exactly. And the football players tried, the NFL tried to hire Marvin Miller back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yep.
And Marvin was like, yeah, I don't trust you guys. Y'all don't stick together. I don't believe that you have the fortitude to do what needs to be done. So thank you, but no thanks.
Now, they got different stakes, though. Like, the one thing I always say with football players, it's a different set of stakes.
Totally.
And, like, they're mad. It's not that football players are irrational. And it's just a bunch more of them, man.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot more of them.
Well, and also, they have a different mentality. They got that weird, you know, the culture of football. And I can't stand when football players say it, because they're taking money out of their own pockets when they're like, next man up. I'm like, no. No. Every man together, not next man up, because you are essentially saying that none of you have any value. I understand the sentiment when it comes to winning, meaning every single person in this room can win us a game. Every single person in this room has a responsibility to be their best when one of us gets hurt, because one of us is getting hurt. Lots of us are getting hurt. But the flip side of that argument plays right into management's hands, that none of you, collectively you may have value, but individually you don't.
You know, it's funny, as I'm hearing you say that, you know what the most powerful football team is that's ever been in terms of the players? The Miami Hurricanes.
Miami.
Seriously. And they operated really on the premise of, we are all in this. Like, you think about the fact that Dennis Erickson took that job in Miami, and the players were like, okay, we'll run your offense, but we're going to keep our defense. You good with that?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. He was like, yeah, you got it. Yeah,
and we're at college.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They ran they knew better than anybody, because of the nature of the rise of that program, that they were the show, right? Like, they'd been in Miami before, it wasn't hitting, then we showed up, now it's on point. We run this.
Mm-hmm. And if you are smart, you will allow us to run this.
Yes. And they did until they couldn't anymore, because you can't really let 20-year-olds run things. That's silly.
You can't let them run things for too long. Eventually it falls apart.
It got to a point where it's like, yo, someone has to stop them.
Right? And you know what's funny about that, too, is that you start looking at just switching quick gears, and I was thinking about this for a piece I'm working on now. How long can the NBA last when your free agency is essentially a season-long soap opera?
I don't know, but I can't wait to find out.
That's what I'm saying, right? I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, what is the actual value of the Boston Celtics and the Los Angeles Lakers when both teams are essentially conducting free agency during the season, right? And the players are essentially – the players – you can go to the All-Star game and the players are essentially conspiring with each other. They're plotting right now.
Yes.
They control everything. So on the one hand, you got baseball players acting like it's Occupy Wall Street, going, "Hey, man, we're not getting our value." And you got basketball players, even the most powerful franchise, the two most successful franchises in the history of that sport, both are getting hammered right now. The Celtics can't win a game because essentially Danny Ainge went out there and made it clear that he would trade his entire team for Anthony Davis. Kyrie Irving's like, "Well, you know what? I'm the one who rules the roost here, so I might not even come back. So what you going to do about that?" The Lakers went out of their way to try and like force a trade and conspire with Anthony Davis to do it, and the Pelicans were like, "Nah." But the Pelicans didn't win either because they're like, "He's not staying, so we're not even going to play him in crunch time." The players control everything. And if the players have that much control, which is great because they've earned it and they deserve it, and I don't think there should be drafts or anything like that anyway. I'm like totally labor on this. But how much longer can you have a prosperous league if the teams actually don't have any value? Like there used to be there was something to be said for being a Laker, something to be said for being a Celtics. I identify with this team, which is why Michael Jordan was like the ultimate superstar. He identified with his team, but he was also the mega individual endorsement superstar guy. Today's players, and I do think this is a conversation for another day on the LeBron factor, LeBron has essentially sent the message to everybody, you are the franchise as the individual. And I wonder what the counter move is going to be. Is the counter move going to be no more opt-outs? There's got to be some counter move that reduces the power of the player, the player's ability to essentially said, as Kyrie Irving was like, "Hey, look, you traded me in the middle of a long-term deal. I'm out. I don't have to be here." The Celtics, if they're not careful, could be a lottery team in 2 years. And they're supposed to win 60 games this year.
While Danny Ainge is hoarding assets, waiting for a future that may never come.
That may never come, exactly. And by the way, today's trivia question, and I want you to think about this, and I'm sure I'll see you over dinner somewhere, is name me the greatest black free agent who in prime chose the Boston Celtics.
Oh, no. We know the answer to that. It's Al Horford.
It's Al Horford.
I say, it's Al Horford.
How are you going to win 17 championships without a free agent?
Look, I knew that because it was shocking that Al Horford went.
Because he went. So you're going to tell me now that you think you can convince Anthony Davis to come to the city of Boston and stay when you have no track record of this? You have no track record of attracting anybody black who has a choice except for Al Horford.
Yeah, because Garnett and Ray Allen were like, "Look, you go, I go."
I go.
You know, but
yep. Trade. Dennis Johnson.
You for real gonna come, bro? Bro, you really gonna come? Like, that's, I mean, right. Don't play with me right now. All right. Yeah. I'm just saying, if you don't come, exactly. No, boy, I'm a woo.
Bro, Reggie Lewis draft. Paul Pierce draft. Robert Parrish trade. Bill Russell trade. I mean, black free agents don't go to Boston, but they do have Gordon Hayward for $31 million for several more years.
Yeah, they don't like when I talk about that. They do not. But hey, man, that's my man, Howard Bryan. Please check out his book, The Heritage. Also check him out at ESPN Magazine. Dude, I greatly appreciate you spending the time with us as usual.
Oh, man, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, man. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, Hims. Also, subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe at the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you're a hater. We'll talk to you in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.